An unabridged dictionary. There are nearly 500,000 words in here, and even the world's most educated man or woman couldn't possibly know them all. For example, this very common object is called a zarf. Yeah, that's right, zarf. Z-A-R-F. But the zarf is by no means the biggest surprise awaiting us on our journey into the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected. These are the kinds of subjects a man named
Tom
Ripley challenged us to.
Believe it or not.
This is Extra Hot Greek 506 for the week of April 9th, 2024.
All right, shut up all of you. I am boat rocker David T. Cole, and I'm here with mid-century Speedo Sarah D. Bunting.
Complimentary belt.
Nice pen, Tara Arieto.
Thanks.
And queer-coded sociopath, Dan Rogge.
Wow, Dave, good to know how you really feel.
Let's get into the site business first, because we're already here. Dave's brain
Sorry, Dan.
Is broken. Dave has something wrong with him.
Yeah.
I told Sarah he slept for 30 hours, and I think she thought I was exaggerating, but that is the literal truth. He slept for 30 hours.
No, I didn't.
Okay, well, so...
Accepted it without comment is maybe the headline. Yikes.
That's true. So we're not sure what's wrong with him. Dave is rallying as much as he can, but if he seems kind of spacey today, that's, you know, because of reasons. We're going to get to our guest in just a second. But first, it is a new month. As we've explained before, that means members fall off the rolls on our Patreon. So check your membership if you are already in the Extra Hot Great Club to make sure you were not on it with an expired credit card. And make sure you don't miss out on all the extra content and benefits that you want. We have great stuff yet to come this month, like the April Forcening, Kim's latest most awesome thing. And if you're one of the listeners who's been grandfathered in at the $2 level, you are missing out on so much show every week. Trust me.
It's true.
You want $1 for our sugar discussion last week alone, with more to come when that twist gets revealed in a few weeks. We also have another listener game time coming up in May that we just recorded. That call for contestants went out solely to Patreon supporters. So if you are not in the club, you're missing out on opportunities like that as well. And we are also, as of this recording, about $200 away from our next campaign goal. Cannon fodder! More cannons!
Yes!
You want more cannons! You want different size and style cannons! All of this is possible with our second cannon segment of the week. You can pick from our ready-to-go cannons. You can submit a tiny cannon, concept, or contender. You can provide us with your cannon choice. You can make us your cannon champion. Cannon! If you're already maxed out on what you can pledge to us each month, thank you so much. We love you. You can always help spread the word about the podcast to your friends, family, loved ones, strangers in line at the grocery store, anyone you know who loves TV.
Can I make a suggestion for the tiny cannons?
Please.
That's going to go straight to Dan Cassino's heart.
Yes.
The William Conrad Cannon.
Love it. So we thank you all so much for being here for more than 500 episodes. My God, we are so thankful still to be doing this for you. We're excited about the prospect of bringing you even more. So go to extrahotgreat.com/club to find out more about what you get if you sign up and what you could get if you kick up your pledge for the grandpas. And thank you so much for your patience. Now, he's a TV executive. He's our dear friend. You've heard him with us many times before. It's Dan Rogge!
Yay!
Dan!
Hi!
We are here to talk about Ripley, in which Tom Ripley, Andrew Scott, is maintaining his lonely life in New York, running mail fraud short cons, when he's invited to a meeting with wealthy shipbuilder Herbert Greenleaf, Kenneth Lonergan. It's Herbert's understanding that Tom is a school friend of Herbert's son, Dickie, Johnny Flynn. And since Herbert is sick of Dickie loafing around Italy, avoiding his responsibilities and living off his trust fund, Herbert would like to pay Tom to go there and talk Dickie into coming home. Tom goes, quickly tells Dickie the truth of how and why he got there, and drifts further and further into Dickie's life, despite the suspicions of Dickie's girlfriend, Marge, Dakota Fanning, that Tom is in love with Dickie. But all vacations must end eventually, especially ones that are being financed by wealthy industrialists who can definitely tell when someone's jerking them around What will Tom do?
One thing you forgot to mention is Marge's attitude towards Tom. Do you want me to explain it?
Sure. The series is adapted from Patricia Highsmith's novel, The Talented Mr. Ripley, which also inspired the 1999 feature film of the same title. This time, our writer-director is the prolific Steven Zaillian, probably still best known for the screenplay for Schindler's List. All 8 episodes dropped on Netflix last Thursday. We'll be careful about spoilers, but chances are you know what happens because you saw the movie sometime in the last 25 years. Let's do the Chen check-in. Dan, should our listeners watch Ripley?
Yes, they should.
Sarah?
Yes, they should.
Oh my God, Dave is so red laughing at his March joke. Guys, this is why we didn't have the episode for you today. Okay. Should they watch, Dave?
Oh, I loved looking at it more than I liked watching it.
Okay. Fair. And we'll get into that. I'm interested to continue watching it. I'm going to finish it. So I'll say yes. Let's get into the specifics. A screen project in our day has to have a good reason to be made in black and white, which this is. Dan, in your opinion, did Ripley earn this or did it feel like an affectation?
Ripley earned this. And I say that from someone whose most highbrow discussion that I'm usually invited on to talk about with you guys is to convince you that there's a bad episode of Riverdale. So this level of highbrow is very much out of my wheelhouse. But I figured since the Billy Joel biopic that was announced like 3 years ago has not come to fruition, I had to come back at some point. So I am tasked with trying to convince you that a show being hailed as the best of the year is good, good. And the black and white was not an affectation, I think, for a lot of the visual reasons that we'll get into later. I thought it was completely earned and shockingly unannoying.
Yeah, before he came in here, we had to describe black and white to Dan in terms of, you know, like an Innocent Man album cover, like that.
You were like, tell her about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like I kind of, other than how gorgeous it looked, I forgot that this was not how most things in its day are made. Like, it makes it so much more immersive. Sarah, what did you think?
No, I agree with that. I think that it made it more convincingly period. I suspect it did start out as an affectation, but there is something about between the camera angles chosen and the way it's lit, I don't know how these shots are composed, sort of like from a, you know, geometry of film standpoint, but there was a sort of surreal, nightmarish quality to the depth of field that was perfect. It was a perfect marriage of form and content, and I really liked it. I did see a lot of complaining about the black and white online, that it's like, why wouldn't you showcase how beautiful Italy is? And it's like, well, it's not The Talented Mr. Italy. you're trying to be in this world from this guy's.
Yeah.
Su,
we can watch a mid-joke.
I'm filming here.
Chef Boyardee.
It's a one longer piece of spaghetti, so you're going to share it with your love, and then at the middle, you go, mwah. So what do we do here?
Yeah, I'm sure we'll have more to say about Scott's performance, but there's some shots where, like, his eyes in the way it's lit are so black. Like, he has such crazy shark eyes on this film that really, I think, contributes to the overall effect of, like, what he's doing in the role.
Well, the other thing they do with the, especially in the first episode in regards to the cinematography, even though I'm, like, a little hesitant to call it cinematography, because what they're actually doing is showing barely moving photos. Because you'll notice in most of the first episode, the camera's not moving. It's just extremely well-framed, well-composed shots, whether they're framing it inside of an arch and sort of giving you a glimpse of what's happening or, you know, blah, 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 all the things you learn in photography school. I thought that was interesting. It wasn't very dynamic in movement, but holy crap, there was a lot of setups, like just the amount of sets they would have to dress for moments that took
a second on screen and you would never see them again.
Mm-hmm.
It was very lush. It seemed like very expensive place to do that too, you know, to do all this in Italy.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was beautiful to look at. And as a, you know, an amateur shutterbug, I was like, wow, these are really great photos. This would have been a great book just to look at,
yeah.
You know, and then there's this whole story. Mm-hmm. There's a guy who's like conning people. This is like photo plus.
Yeah. In terms of the effort, too, I was thinking, like, when we see in the first episode Ripley walk all the way up the stairs to the villa, it's like, wow, how many people had to walk up all those million stairs?
I know. Yep.
With all their gear. Anyway.
That's why Italy is number one in jetpack research.
They're sending drones up. We get mail fraud process stuff almost immediately. Of course, I have to go to Sarah. Your thoughts?
I definitely enjoyed it. Definitely enjoyed how loving they were about that aspect of the production design, focusing on little quirks of typewriters and that like E that was a little higher,
mm-hmm.
and how he had all the stationery. And, you know, it, that was at a point in the show where I hadn't quite decided whether I thought that this kind of the showy camera angles and the black and white and all of that was too much or whether it worked for me. But by the time we got to the equally processy demise of a certain character and how long it took to just get that done, I was like, this really understands, I think, on some creepy level, what it would be like to have to try to dispose of a body mm-hmm. in the middle of the sea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was when I took out my own brain and put in my Sarah brain, when you realized, and I'm not the first person to have said this, but it's not a show about murder. It's a show about what happens in the 5 minutes following the murder as its mm-hmm. most interesting aspect. And mm-hmm. I was like, that is the newest twist you can put on such familiar subject matter that I mm-hmm. was like, that is one of the reasons that it worked so well for me, for sure.
I would have called it Getchatori if you can.
Well, I was reminded of that. I was reminded of Shattered Glass, too. He has a bit of a, like,
yeah.
you know, especially in the scene where after Dickie catches him, like, doing a pretty good Dickie impression, and then he has to essentially say without saying it, are you mad at me? Like, I'll go if you want me to, you know, that whole thing. But it's also funny. I mean, Dan, you already tipped this in your sociopath intro. It's interesting as it goes on which scams Ripley can spot and which ones he can't, because he seems to have a real blind spot about luggage. Like, that's one where he gets taken a couple of times. But anyway, speak on that since you brought up his sociopathy.
Well, I mean, I think he's such a, you know, the nuance of the character, it's so easy to sort of like miss the point of what Ripley actually is. It's like, is he, well, I'll go just as far as the gay stuff is concerned. I'm going to yeah. just get, we'll get through this just to say that it's like, if you have read the book or listened to the author speak on it in her many conflicting versions or watched the 1999 movie, one of the reviews that I read in the series said something like, well, in this version, Dickie asked Tom if he's queer early on, and he says no, so that dispenses with that theme for this series. And I was like, you, sir, are fired. I was like, I'm not sure if you've ever asked someone in the 1960s, and they're like, no, and you take it at face value. You were the prom date that everyone was laughing at behind your back. So I just felt like it all figured into the character. Like, obviously, yes, it is all there.
That guy would make a great judge as well. How do you plead? Not guilty. All right, goodbye.
Well, I have read some critiques, too, that Andrew Scott, he's 47. He's probably, like, let's say minimum 20 years too old to play this role. Did others find this attracting? Dan, you're nodding.
Well, listen, I thought that everyone was aged up, right? I think mm-hmm. that everyone was a bit older, certainly than they were in the movie when it was this lush, luxe, beautiful, all of the showing of the Italy that you wanted to see. And in this one, as we keep talking about, the show is like literally all mood. Like, you have to do your part and put away your phone so that you can find the nuance and subtext of a 47-year-old Andrew Scott climbing stairs for 50 minutes, which is the show. Like, and I, again, speaking from the perspective of somebody who watched Roma on my phone, I watched Oppenheimer over 3 different days on 3 different television. I'm like Nolan's nightmare. So I can't even be like, but it's okay because I love The Night Of, but I didn't because it was 2016 and I was watching Broad City. So like the fact that they were able to take all of those elements and just be like, everybody's a weird age. People aren't actually moving around. There isn't a ton going on until I'm going to say episode 3. Like it's still all somehow worked. And I only got through 4 episodes, which is actually really unfortunate because I wanted to finish it, but it reminded me of another thing in the plus column, which I will say is that this is where we should all be making the joke about how all the episodes were like 87 minutes long or something, and they're not.
They're not.
Like, from what I watched, nothing was even over 49 minutes, which in and of itself is a towering achievement of restraint in the entire streaming era. So that was like A plus for me.
100%.
Yeah. They were setting up enough shots to that lovingly sort of caressed Tom Ripley's crow's feet that I was like, what is the, like, what's the play here in terms of everyone being aged up? But I think it works on along two axes. One, that in the sort of other iterations of the story, Dickie is a 20 something who like, okay, now it's time for you to come back and return, you know, like assume the throne.
Right.
That has been waiting for you in American capitalism. Here, he seems like much more of a dilettante. And like, this has been going on a while. Like, that actor is also in his 40s,
he's,
I believe,
41,
or close
yeah.
to 40. Mm-hmm. So the idea that he's been like literally dicking around over there, I mean, for it to be age appropriate, like he would have been a serviceman in World War II, you assume. So you can't think too deeply on the math.
Right.
But that kind of worked for me in terms of the characterization of Dickie as a character that Ripley aspires to, but we're supposed to despise him. The other reason it worked is that, you know, so much of a successful con is people just sort of agreeing to the social contract of pattern recognition and not, it's like, oh, he seems a little old to be doing this shit, or to be a classmate of Dickie's wherever, but we'll just go with it because this is what we've been told is the truth. So I thought that it may not have been intentional. They may just have wanted Andrew Scott to play this part. And they did whatever they had to do to justify it to themselves. But I think you can kind of retcon the aging up to work for the material.
Yeah. It is a funny sort of runner that they keep saying, I don't remember ever meeting you in my life. It's like, so much of this con depends on noblesse oblige, you know, like no one ever wants to admit, no, I do not remember you. So that's like what most of this rests on. Like you can get away with a lot if you sort of put someone on their heels that way and make them think I'm going to be a clod if I don't play along with this. So that's part of it, too, I think. Oftentimes, a screen project will give us cues that someone's art is bad, and I am not totally sure I agree other than from context, but shout out to whoever made Dickie's paintings, because they are fascinatingly bad.
I know. Oh,
my God. The not a slog quality of the show extended to the, like, I was like, I could just watch Tom trying to say something nice about Dickie's painting for an entire, that's the 62-minute episode on Apple TV that I would actually stick around for.
Yeah.
So funny.
Like, that nude of Marge, and she looks like the schmoo, and the camera lingers on it just long enough.
With two schmoobs. Yes, totally.
I know. Picasso-oobs. Yeah, just, no.
I will say this, if we're supposed to think Ripley is enough of an aesthete to be able to correctly assess Dickie's art and Marge's writing, he, I think, also would be the kind of guy who would make his bed in New York. That was a detail that really bugged me. I won't go so far as to say his place would be nice, because as we saw, like he had to burn literally the collection agency letterhead. He has to be ready to leave whenever. But even if it's just for him, I feel like he would make his bed. I don't know. Am I crazy?
No, I agree.
Okay.
I think the dilettantism of their art needs to be so bad for him to be able to, like, that he was literally, like, when he was going through her manuscript, he was marking up, like, correcting the spelling of T-E-H. Like, it was literally, like, he was just like, I am doing the most basic thing in the world. And she was like, thank you. Because to your earlier point, they've been dicking around with this kind of work in Italy for, like, 20 plus years. I can't remember. I think it was Glenn Weldon who said that in the movie, they were all of these aspirational characters, and that in the TV show, Dickie's entire personality is, I'm the rich one. And
yes.
I was like, that is exactly mm-hmm. right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think no one really wants to continue Nepo baby discourse at this late date, but the funniest parts of this project are when we just see Ripley, like, having complete contempt for these jagoffs in a way that's very amusing to me. So, yes, love it.
The only other thing I would say is can I say one other thing about the visuals?
Yes, yes,
just
yes.
Because, you know, again, as high as the caliber here of directing and acting is, I simply must say one word to the cinematography is that I am a real life Robert Elswit super fan. And I know how that sounds. Standing Paul Thomas Anderson's DP is actually giving straight coded psychopath. But I'm not going to talk about his movies. I'm going to talk about the two projects of his that have actually influenced my life more than any other. Number one is the 1982 TV movie All Summer in a Day, which was this short film based on a Ray Bradbury story, which mm-hmm. I saw when I was that age and will never forget it.
It's about the kid. Mm-hmm. Is that the one with the kid in the closet at school?
Yes, okay. It is. So, mm-hmm. yes. Mm-hmm. And then number two is, of course, the Michael Penn video for Try. So I would like everybody to spend 3 minutes watching The World's Longest Hallway also be photographed very slowly. Winner.
Love it.
It's time to go around the dial. Our first stop is Tara.
Hello! Monsters, Inc. spun off Monsters University, a movie prequel in 2021. It also spun off a TV series called Monsters at Work. We talked about it back in episode 363 when it premiered. The premise is, what happens to a monster who has just spent 4 years studying the art of scaring only to enter the workforce and find out the company that recruited him has switched to laugh power, so his skills are obsolete? It's an unusually dark concept for a show that was originally on Disney Plus, and yet one that also makes total sense for, you know, late capitalism, but also the universe the show exists in. Our POV character is Tyler Tuskman, played by Ben Feldman. He's the new grad. He gets shunted from a dream job that no longer exists to working for the Monsters, Inc. facilities team, which seems to be populated entirely by monsters who are weird, even by monster standards. Tyler decides he wants to become a jokester, and he spends the first season working toward that goal. So when we rejoin him in season two, which premiered on Friday, he is using his comedy material on the kids whose closet doors he is assigned. But his signature gag, which is putting donuts on his very long horns, does not hit so hard once the kids have seen it. And Tyler struggles to fill one canister with laughs, but he keeps getting reminders of the life he could have had and maybe could still have, because as a former Scream King, he gets to take a victory lap at Monsters University homecoming only to over-explain to the crowd that he's not actually working as a scarer anymore. Complicating things is the fact that I don't think we knew this in the first season, but he could be a scarer. There's another energy company in Monsteropolis called Fearco, which is run by Johnny Worthington, a rival of Sully's from the Monsters University movie. He's played by Nathan Fillion here and there. Johnny has his eye on Tyler and his superior untapped scaring skills. So the show, I would say, is pitched to older kids. It's also, I'm sure I said this when I talked about season one, surprisingly funny to immature adults who don't have kids. Hello. In the second mm-hmm. episode, Tyler has to get rid of an unstable canister in a bathroom stall, and it's juvenile as poo jokes go, but I truly was howling about how they pulled it off. The design of the various characters lets them be so expressive, even if they only have, like, eyes, and most of what makes this bathroom gag work is essentially a monster extra barely reacting to insanity behind him while he's washing his hands. It's a very cute, well-made show, has a lot of great voice performances, must take a lot of care because it truly has been almost 3 full years since season one. That is on Disney Plus. I think new episodes will get there, but they premiere on the Disney Channel and on Disney XD on Saturday mornings. Saturday morning cartoons, still a thing. Dave, you watched the first 3 episodes with me. Do you remember them at all?
Crass and Beneath Me. The scene you're talking about is on the level of the Austin Powers, you're going to blow an O-ring kind
yes,
of scene.
Yes, it is. Yeah. It's really
good. Which is a lot for a children's cartoon.
It is. I mean, it's really, like I said, it's very well done. I think I'm a poo joke aficionado, and this meets my high standard. Anyway, I wrote about the season so far at Cracked and about how Monsters at Work is here to teach your children about ethics under capitalism. So read that if you wish. It's linked in the show notes.
All right, Dan, what do you got for us?
Well, if you're here and you don't already know that you should have watched season 3 of Only Murders in the Building, I don't know what we're doing. But I personally fell off during season 2, which was not my absolute favorite, so I'm going to be really specific about what brought me back to this, the Meryl season, TM, must credit. I literally have two thoughts, and one of which is just a scene that I play out in my head of Meryl in real life, just like alone on a phone in like a really nice kitchen, and she's talking to like one of the thousands of gummerlets, some of which we haven't even experienced for the first time yet. And Meryl's just like smiling a little, and she's like, oh, I'm just working on this little thing with Steve and Marty. Of course, Marty. And yes, oh yes, it's just what fun. So that's why I like it. Just thinking of Meryl just going to work with like her two friends and like being stupid for something that she's going to completely accidentally win an Emmy for. And then number two, the Patter song as a concept, the very idea of a song in a fake musical as good as Steve Martin singing Which of the Pickwick Triplets Did It on season 3 of some Hulu show. even Mamie and Louisa and probably the other ones are here for it. And if you have fallen off the show, highest recommendation, they use a Sondheim-esque Patter song in a scene to help forward the plot and solve a murder. That is A-plus material with A-plus people doing hilariously A-minus dialogue, and I couldn't love it more. For my plug, the rumors are true, and the media industry is collapsing. I consider myself among the lucky, blessed few not to have had a day off since my first day working in television in 20,000 years ago and four, but many TV professionals I know are feeling less so. So we know the myriad reasons. It was partly the strike. It was partly the other strike. It's a lot the fact that Netflix kind of forgot to vet its original business model, and when 6,000 other streamers chased it down the content rabbit hole, they found neither profits nor subscribers at the bottom. So, in light of the fact that I am off of nearly every social media channel that exists, my plug this week is for your LinkedIn. I have just been talking to everybody. People who have jobs, people who have gotten laid offs. I'm doing a day of informationals and chats on Fridays. So if you're trapped in this Facebook for middle managers doom loop site, which so many of my other friends are, hit me up and let's talk. I can help you now, and then when my company gets eaten by private equity and our world corporate HQ in New York gets turned into a CVS or a parking garage in 3 years, you can return the favor. And bonus points if you are a live human in the Pacific Northwest, where I've actually started meeting in person with a group we have named the Seattle Networking Activity Club, or SNACK, whose numbers we are looking to grow. So let's get through this media mess together. Only 20 years left until retirement.
I'm glad you said retirement, because I thought it was going to get darker. Sarah, what have you been watching recently?
Okay, well, we are finally caught up at our house with Space Show.
Hey!
This is what the rest of you call For All Mankind. We actually really enjoyed the show's transition from a well-reasoned thought experiment about an alternate timeline for the space program to a redonk soap opera set partly on the moon and Mars. Even the utterly non-credible continuing presence of characters from the first season who are at minimum 70 years old and never look at, like anything other than 38-year-olds with a bunch of spackle and cobwebs from Party City on their heads, we could laugh at it. So it worked for us. And there's nothing quite like Joel Kinnaman doing his Ferdinand the Bull quote acting under a rained-on bag of, you know, Halloween cobwebs from Party City to say fun on a Friday night at our house. We have rich, full lives. But For All Mankind was as bad as it has ever been in season 4 at 1, juggling its many characters and plot lines without having to park a handful of stories off screen for episodes at a time, and 2, making sure amid all the high stakes plot twists that it was developing those twists for characters we gave a shit about, so that the show can finally escort some of the oldsters off the stage in a putative season 5. I have loved watching Ren Schmidt's Margot through the show's decades. I liked where that story ended up, even though 85% of it wouldn't and couldn't have happened the way the show claimed it did. I was aware throughout that every scene we spent with Margot was a scene that wasn't bringing in someone else to work with Alita or challenge Dev. The characters they chose to move into the spotlight in the fourth season were a mixed bag at best, and the one they already had on board is a new class agent, Kelly, just disappeared for hours at a time in an unbelievable fashion, given that her fucking grade school child is on Mars with her. I just don't know where they go with it after the last time jump, and a lot of things at the end of this season's timeline weren't really wrapped up. How was the aftermath of that last brawl handled? What exactly is going on with Norma Rae What's-Her-Face, who's floating outside the space station? Did Irina get disappeared? Is Kelly Jr. going to get promoted to A-plot status next year? Do we even know what happened to the non-Danny Stevens spawn? Whatever they end up doing, it's going to be dumb, it's going to be unrealistic, and I cannot wait to talk shit about it with y'all when, like, 92-year-old Ed is a brain in a jar floating around the asteroid. I don't even know what's going to happen. It's going to be great. I can't wait.
The best part of the universe in which this takes place is that for decades, NASA has failed to produce viable astronaut candidates, which is why we still have to put 70, 80, 90-year-olds up as commanders of these missions. And frankly, I hope they never get their shit together. Because, yeah, if we are going to, like, ladies and gentlemen, we have to go to Saturn because we need ring juice to live. Then it's got to be Ed. It's like a 120-year-old going, what? I said, and then they go and do it. And then there's like something very earthy happens on the way there. Like, and we also have to make a TV show or up there. Fuck this shit. And that's like episode 7. Yes, I'm there for it. Frankly, Sarah, I think when it comes back and there's new episodes, we should have a 3-minute as fast as we can recap segment on Extra Extra Hot Grade.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, agree.
Good. All right. Done.
And I will say right now, I feel like hologram someone is going to be involved. No bet? Okay.
Okay. Mm. Yeah, no, I think you're there. Yeah.
Speaking of talking shit, that's what Mark Blankenship and I are doing in our Weird Al versus Everybody season of Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. There's just a couple weeks left in the season. You can get caught up at patreon.com/mastass or wherever you listen to podcasts, but only our Patreon supporters hear the entire season plus the 3 singles that we're doing. So come by. Join us. It's a fun group. We'd love to have you. We've got it all on UHF, as they say.
I think if we do that recap, then we're going to put out a special edition of the space sticker.
Yes.
Except there's 2 duct tape mummies floating around in the scene.
Well, I think you have to redesign it so it looks like a challenge coin. Like, it looks like a patch that would be...
I don't have time for that.
Yes, you do.
I'm just going to stick 2 mummies on the sticker and we're done here.
Okay, fine.
I slept for 30 hours. I'm not going to find time to do a sticker.
Just run a handful of the stickers through an actual cobweb and throw them in an envelope. This is not difficult.
Every day I sleep, I lose a quarter of the day the next day. That's how much I'm sleeping now. All right, here's what's coming up on Extra Extra Hot Great this Friday, which is in about 2 hours, according to my watch. It's Fallout from Prime Video. This is a video game in which there's fallout, and you can't go outside because of all the fallout. And it features Boy Crowder, except he lost his nose. It's the story of how Boy Crowder lost his nose. If you want to find out why he lost his nose, well, you're going to have to tune in to find out. And then right here on EHG Prime next week, it is Apple TV's Franklin, and we welcome back Crystal Farmer to talk about that. He is the man who invented electricity as we're taught in school.
Yeah.
Before that, there was no electricity.
That's right.
You would like rub your socks on the carpet and nothing would happen. And then Ben Franklin came in. He's like, bam! He's like, fuck you, Ben Franklin. God damn it. I'm so tired. I'm so tired. All right. It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon user submission this week. Take it away, Britt.
Hello, Extra Hot Great. I'm delighted and terrified to have the honor of presenting the only episode in TV history I love and know well enough to present for the canon. Moonlighting Season 2, Episode 4, The Dream Sequence Always Rings Twice. It's not just an excellent example of this show, it's an excellent example of what TV can do. In Moonlighting, former Blue Moon shampoo model Maddie Hayes is reluctantly partnered with former tax write-off David Addison. They work at Blue Moon Detective Agency. Here, we have some verisimilitude since the roles are played by former model Sybil Shepherd, who is reluctantly paired with Bruce Willis. The episode begins with a surprise introduction. Clip one.
Good evening. I'm Orson Welles. Tonight, broadcasting takes a giant leap backward. In this age of living color and stereophonic sound, the television show Moonlighting is daring to be different and share with you a monochromatic, monophonic hour of entertainment. Approximately 12 minutes into this evening's episode, the picture on your television screen will change to black and white.
Orson Welles' cigar is the only actual smoking in this film noir homage, but there will be plenty of smoking hot looks. In our frame story, modern, well, 1985, Maddie and David go to an old nightclub, primarily so the nightclub owner can tell them the tale that will guide the rest of our episode. Clip two.
Then, of course, there was the famous Flamingo Cove murder.
That was here?
In this room.
There was a murder here?
Oh, yeah. Jim Dandy.
You never heard of that?
Mm-mm.
Oh, was it a singer or something, right?
Fell in love with this trumpet player. They killed her husband. One of them did, anyway. Right during a show. And then each one swore the other did it, right up to the very end.
Well, who did do it?
Nobody knows. They both went to the electric chair, each swearing the other one did, to their dying day.
David and Maddie argue in the car about who was truly guilty. Clip three.
You think the boyfriend killed the husband just because he was a man, and that makes you a sexist.
I am not a sexist.
Ooh, are you a sexist?
I am not a sexist. Sexist. I'm not speaking to you.
I'm not.
Not another word, not another sound, not another peep until we get back to the office.
They each dream different versions of the mystery that night, in black and white, as Wells said. Rita the singer is depicted by Shepherd, and Zach the cornet player is Willis, with the rest of the ensemble in the bit parts. In Maddie's dream, Rita's the supportive wife of a boring clarinet player. She's seduced by rakish Zach and appalled by what they've done. David's dream has a Philip Marlowe-style voiceover and a sexy and remorseless Rita who's married to an abusive clarinetist. Both sequences are cleverly written and beautifully lit, with costuming and music that do a lot of the storytelling. The music in both dreams quickly sketches our characters. Sarah and Tara can speak to whether or not Sybil Shepherd can sing, but I love her. And we're all probably glad Bruce Willis wasn't the vocalist, though I loved my return to Bruno Cassatt. In Maddie's dream, Rita and Zach's first meeting is when she's singing a ballad and is interrupted by Zach's playing. Clip four. Her demure song is a perfect match for Rita's high-necked white dress and prim victory roll hairdo. In David's version, Rita's song is much sassier, as is she. Clip five.
There may be times when I need you, there's no doubt.
That was the first time I saw Rita.
Baby, now you're something I can't do without.
She was the kind of dame that makes a man grateful he's a man. She looked like she was misunderstood. Me, I wanted to understand her, like I've never understood any woman before. Come to think of it, I never have understood any woman before.
You just gonna watch or you plan to use that thing?
She had quite a mouth on her, too.
Which thing is that?
Of course, I wasn't exactly wanting in that department either.
Bugle boy, huh?
Sure. You wanna go for a drink later?
Should I bring my husband?
You're married?
Does it matter?
Mike to your husband.
Just from hearing the song, you can almost see her black low-cut dress and Lauren Bacall's sexy hair swooping over one eye. In both dreams, Rita's voice and Zach's cornet flirt with each other just as they do, though with less steamy eye-fucking. The soundtrack also accentuates the quick tonal shifts in the writing. In a scene where Rita rubs an ice cube up her neck as it drips down her slip-covered cleavage, suggests murdering her husband, drops the ice, crashes into Zach chasing the cube while crawling across the floor, then angrily slams the ice back to Zach, the score moves from sultry to menacing to slapstick without missing a beat. Glorious. Moonlighting's the first show where I remember people commenting on the lighting. Maddie is often bathed in a warm glow with haloed hair, the lens vaselined. These dream sequences take it to a whole other level. Rita is radiant with sparkling jewelry and flashing eyes. Zach's lit like the classic noir leads the art director clearly reveres. As Zach says, clip six.
I always play my horn with my shirt off, late at night, by an open window, next to a flashing neon light. I know I look good that way.
Preparing this submission has actually increased my own enjoyment rewatching the show. The lead's over-the-top emoting has historically been a bit much for me. But I realize now that while this episode is a love letter to black and white movies, the show itself is a throwback to traditional screwball comedies. In His Girl Friday, my favorite film, Cary Grant growls and flails in frustration just as much as Shepard does throughout Moonlighting. The movie's famous for the speedy banter and over-talking Moonlighting later became known for. Also, Rosalind Russell and Grant slam a whole lot of phones in that film. Sidebar, I wanted to include a clip montage of all the phone Foley work in this episode, but didn't want to lose Dave's vote before we even started. I love this show. I'm over the blue moon that is now streaming on Hulu and believe this is an exemplar episode of TV. It includes most of my favorite elements of this show, including a quick fourth wall break and lots of sexual tension. I defy anyone to find more aspirational hair on TV in 1985 than Cybill Shepherd's. Bruce Willis's deep vocal fry as David Addison knocked me over way more than his muscles did as John McClane. The dream sequence always rings twice as formative for me, so it's inconceivable that you'll adore it as much as I do. I do hope, however, that you'll like it enough to put it in the canon. Thank you.
Thank you, Britt. Dan, you chose this from among our submissions. Please start off our discussion.
Well, the real reason I chose it was actually just to hear y'all's thoughts on a gimmicky theme episode that was like, when in doubt, just add jazz. But for me, Moonlighting holds a very special place in my personal TV history as well, I have to say. Like, 80s TV was not considered a highbrow affair by its very nature. And especially as a small child at the time, the airwaves, they were like awash in sitcoms of, I'll say, varying quality. And the thought, like the notion of an hour-long show without a laugh track made Moonlighting my first, like, adult show at that age, I'll say, ever. And to put this in historical, extra hot context, this season two episode aired on October 15th, 1985, 3 months shy of my 10th birthday, concurrent on network TV with season 7 of Facts of Life, season 4 of Silver Spoons and Family Ties, the final seasons of both Benson and Different Strokes, the first season of Growing Pains and something called The Golden Girls, and at least a year before the premieres of hour-long shows like L.A. Law and 30-something. So it is old, and it was ahead of its time. So on the one hand, it is hard to think of this episode as representative of the entire series when it's such a weird, offbeat fantasy version. But on the other hand, a full 67% of Moonlighting episodes were weird, offbeat fantasy episodes. And this one had the weird, offbeat addition of the weird, offbeat introduction by Orson Welles, as discussed. But then the theme song comes in and you're like, fine, yes, I'll watch it. In that way, it's like typical in how atypical it is, a twist from the mystery of the week formula in a show that was born to twist the formula. There was the Shakespeare episode, the entirely fourth wall breaking episode starring Whoopi Goldberg and Judd Nelson, the fully choreographed dream sequence to all of Billy Joel's Big Man on Mulberry Street. I'll be bringing that next time to paraphrase Amy Sedaris. Where isn't the wacky theme episode? That said, This show is at its best and contains one element that I did find largely absent from this episode, which is that screwball workplace dynamic with the signature, as she referred to it, His Girl Friday, Maltese Falcony dialogue, and sort of stable of the wacky, you know, stable of wacky supporting characters. I can point to the particular example in that this episode misses what my 9-year-old self remembers most clearly about moonlighting, which is the offbeat charm of one Alice Beasley as the great Miss Agnes DePesto, who in the sliver of an office scene provided in this episode gets one of the best drive-by laughs of the episode. Dave, please play clip Dan.
Hello, Mercedes.
I'm going home.
Goodbye, Mercedes.
Boom. Dialogue, I want to live. Dialogue-wise, I want to live in that for an hour. So I'm not going to lie, I came into this undecided. But one person you will definitely get a yes from, again, to the presenter's fantastic point, is one Sybil Shepherd, who must have been thrilled to be able to sing her way through an entire episode, which was usually much more Mr. Hudson Hawk's jam as the series grinded along. So as for me, I am dying, in two separate flashbacks, to hear what the rest of the panel thought.
I'll go next. Yeah, I'm glad you called out the several singing scenes, because this was just a thing that ladies did in the 80s. If they had a show, like we've seen Mary Lou Henner do a full dance number on Taxi in a dream sequence. Dixie Carter, I think, in like every other episode of Designing Women.
Yeah, it was like death of the variety show methadone.
That's right. Yeah. So if you were, you know, powerful enough, you could just say, I want to sing in this show, and you would. And, you know, to Britt's question, I do think she can sing. She sounds good, and especially doing it in that sort of period style when we sing or hear her in the sexier song, like, you know, with the trills and stuff. I think she's good. It's just a little self-indulgent. Like, this episode felt long to me as it was continuing to go into like David's half. I was like, oh God, is this over 2 hours? Like it really felt like it was. I watched the show at the time too. I have not revisited it since, except for the No Knack episode that we definitely voted in, the one with the dead baby. That was a rough one.
Yep.
And when you know that the two of the leads hated each other famously in real life, like it does color it, but at the same time, like they do really have chemistry, like they're still good, they're good in these parts, even though like the other obvious referent from this, not only the screwball comedies, is obviously this was drafting in the wake of Cheers, you know, Sam and Diane energy trying to be recreated on ABC as well, and so that sort of comes through too, but like the two of them really are good. It's funny that she says, too, that Maddie is a former shampoo model. I'm sure I knew that at the time. I had forgotten that part of her backstory. And it's like, okay, well, that explains why her hair is so beautiful all the time and why we're getting lens flares off of it in almost every shot. It was a weird one. I take Dan's point that, like, weird ones is what this show did.
That was the original name of the show.
Weird ones.
Weird ones.
Is what this show did.
Some weird by night.
I'm not sure how I'm going to vote. I don't know why I said that. I am sure how I'm going to vote. This one didn't grab me. It was like a little bit too much, I think. I didn't need both, you know, a 40s nostalgia plus also Rashomon. Like it's, you know, the story was kind of thin to begin with. I didn't necessarily need to see it twice. I'm not saying I would not vote through a Moonlighting canon. I just don't think this was it for me. And the Orson Welles intro is so strange, but it also just the whole time I was like, he really does sound like the impression that Maurice LaMarche did on The Critic.
Yeah, he does.
He just sounds like that.
He's the brain. From Pinky and the Brain.
Yeah, no, I know.
No, I'm just saying that's his voice. Yeah,
I'm not mad at it, but I also this did not captivate me, Sarah.
Well, and also, you know, knowing that Orson Welles like got up from that seat and keeled
and
over,
died. Yeah,
and he
yeah.
like died, yeah. obviously reading from the teleprompter. I mean,
did anybody look up if this was his final?
No,
it was.
Performance?
It was.
I believe this was his final credit. That I think so.
All right, I'm going to look it up.
Yeah, this is like the number one thing that is known about this episode, I think, online. That and the fact that, according to the IMDb, it's the most well-regarded one.
Oh.
Wonderful presentation. Moonlighting definitely brings you back to a time, like that, those credits and like the sort of grimy conception of cities and storytelling in a theme song. Like, I don't like the theme song, but it's effectual. And this is what I feel about Moonlighting as a whole. Frankly, I'm sorry to tell you, I do not like the show. I have never liked the show. It does not. I understand what it's trying to do, and I respect that that is enjoyable for a lot of people. I forced myself to watch it back in the day because a close friend of mine loved it, felt the way that Brit did about it, and I respected that and wanted to be able to have conversations with my friend about this television program that was a trial. And this one was kind of a trial also. Like, and this is not its fault, but you really feel a 50-minute runtime. Like, you really do. And it's, you know, that's just the era. That's just how things were sold against. But man, like, this might have had a better shot at 44 minutes or 41 and a half. But that said, I don't think so. Like, I was never able to suspend my disbelief with this show then or now. I don't think they have especially good chemistry. It feels pretty forced to me. Cybill Shepherd as an actor is a fine singer and shampoo model. Like, you'd think that she would have a better handle by a few episodes into the second season on this like rat-a-tat dialogue that's being written for her. And that is the foundation, like, you know, it's right on the tin of the show. Not so much. You can hear her thinking, I hope I get through this on this 14th take this time without screwing it up. It just does not, it doesn't speak to me, this show. But I will say that this is the kind of episode that made the show zeitgeisty then, and is why we talk about it now, because even if it wasn't working for me, this show was trying some shit every week. Sometimes it was an unmitigated disaster, viz. The Nonak episode. Other times it was this like very ambitious love letter to a genre or another artist like this. I am not going to vote for this, but this is actually a perfect example of something that should maybe go into a different kind of canon, like a different hallway in the metaphorical building of the extra hot great canon. That's like, you know, we see what you're trying to do, we just didn't care for it.
Yeah.
Wing. I don't know what to do with it.
The homage canon, yes, like, you know, Community episodes could go in there too.
That was like the mercy fuck canon, the way you're describing it.
Oh, I'm not fucking it. Sorry. Yeah, I mean, there were things to enjoy here, but one of my notes is like the guy who plays the clarinetist husband in the flashbacks. The fact that he was Mr. Ellen Travolta was almost the most interesting thing about the episode to me, and that's probably not canon worthy, but I did appreciate revisiting this and looking things up about it and trying to get a handle on why I think the show's like effort should be in the canon, but this actual episode it shouldn't, in my opinion. So interesting thought experiment and wonderful presentation as well. Dave.
All right. So Orson Welles' last movie credit, like chronologically by release date, was Transformers the Movies, which he's famous for. But
yeah,
it looks like this was the last thing he actually re-recorded. He died 5 days after recording that intro.
This was his Let It Be.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So this was, mm-hmm. He's like, all right, well. weird choice. Who do you think reads off cue cards more, Orson Welles in Moonlighting or Robert De Niro on Saturday Night Live?
Ooh.
I have a contemporary example, and it's John Goodman in The Conners. Trust
Just showing up, didn't have time to read a script.
Mm-mm.
This episode, I would have been way more into this episode if we could have lost the Rita flashback or the Rita Rashomon version. Because when you follow that kind of lackluster by the numbers version with the Zach version, the clarinetist version, so much more dynamic, more fun, goofier, zanier, like the end where he's, you know, in his prison gear getting ready to be fried. Like that whole thing was just weird and wacky. Like if it had that energy from the start of the whole who did who, imagination bit that, you know, turns the show black and white, then I would probably have a different say on this. But that was half the episode, and half the episode was just sort of like, this is not nearly as stylish and funny and rat-a-tatty as it needed to be. Like, that first part was not rat-a-tatty. The second part was rat-a-tatty.
Yeah.
And I think they were going for rat-a-tatty. I want to say once more, because if I say it the fourth time, I get one free. Rat-a-tatty.
Yeah. It was almost like to a police squad level of, like, kookiness. Like, with I wondered how many signs were going to fly past me, you know.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of, like, goofy fun like that.
Yeah.
Compare and contrast the two viewpoints in black and white. One very much suffers from that. But I'm going to be honest, and this is going to make a lot of people very angry. I don't want to hear your letters. Don't at me. Can't at me. I'm not on social media. But I had more fun watching and hating the baby episode than I had genuine fun watching this one. It's not to say this one's bad or terrible. It just wasn't like super great.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, which episode I'm remembering the one where Bruce Willis is an unborn baby that gets unborn at the end of the episode. Hooray? God. Question mark?
It is so weird. You're right.
Oh my God.
Like that one. If we're talking about theoretical canons, that is, it came back around again canon material for me, which is like, what the fuck? What the fuck? What the fuck? Please come over to my house and watch this with me. It's great. Like, it's that kind of like, oh my God. Oh my God.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of like little moments that are worthy of liking here and worthy of, you know, what people remember Moonlighting for. But the big chunk in the middle where they're really just doing the who did who thing, it really suffers. And I thought there was a huge lull from like the third to like the, let's say the two thirds point, which, you know, that's the third of the show. Can't really put it in the canon if that much of it was sort of like making me yawn a bit. So,
And as much as I loved Britt's attention to detail on the visuals, which I thought was such a fantastic part of the presentation, I think it might not have benefited from our other black and white photography project that we watched start this episode off. It could have, that could have been one of the reasons we paled on Black and White Week. On
it's true. I'll also add, how did two people get, who were presumably tried in separate trials, both get executed for the same crime? Like, as soon as one of them gets convicted, it's like, that's used in the other one's trial.
That's right.
Anyway.
Sorry, just to backtrack. So you think two people can't kill one person?
I do, but I'm saying they both protested their innocence. I don't think that they were tried jointly.
You tell that to Zach Ode Vanzetti. All right, now it's time to put this.
You can't.
You can't, because they're both dead. All right, let's put this to the vote. Dan Rogie, what say you?
Well, owing to knowing where the winds are blowing, plus Sarah's point that this was the reason that the show remains in a zeitgeisty period of our 80s TV understanding, I'm going to go with a yes.
Sarah D. Bunting. Oh, man. What vote you?
I mean, it's also Pacific Northwest week, apparently. Britt, you know I love you, but I can't. No, it's a no for me.
Tara?
I grant that it's an important show. This one was not it for me. So, you know, I invite people to keep trying because I know Britt is not the only one rewatching it, but this is a no for me as well.
Yeah, I could tell that this is a good show, but not throughout the whole episode. That was my problem. It's sort of like there's a big chunk in the middle where I'm like, maybe not. So I'm going to say no too. So that means, unfortunately, Moonlighting, Season 2, Episode 4, The Dream Sequence Always Rings Twice, you are hereby not inducted into the Extra Hot Gray Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time to discover the winner and loser of the week. This week's winner, Sarah.
It is the Seven Seas. Why? Because the NCIS franchise has celebrated its 1,000th episode. How?
Navally.
It's on Monday. celebrate filing your taxes, then watch the 1,000th episode of the NCIS franchise.
Take a Dramamine and enjoy.
Do your taxes. Mm-hmm. Invite your best friend out to a...
Yep.
the ocean. And take... Mm-hmm. How, Navally. Everybody?
Navally.
Navally.
Navally. That's
right. And... And spoilers. And who is the loser of the week?
Well, the losers collectively are all of the homophobes who are yelling at Oliver Stark because they can't handle that Buck, the character he has played on 911 for several years, is, as we learned in the most recent episode, queer. He kissed a boy, played by Lou Ferrigno Jr., of all people, and it was hot.
You might like me when I'm horny. That's his catchphrase.
Oh, God.
Who's the queer-coded psychopath now?
Seriously. Anyway, Dave, I told Dave that Buck was gay now, and Dave was like, it still doesn't make his interesting. I was like, it makes him more interesting than he was, yeah, and I stand by that.
Does it?
Yes! Of course.
All right.
The most boring kind of man you can be is straight. Sorry. Like, automatically, it's a step up. No offense. I know you're not well, but you know it's true.
Maybe that's why.
Maybe that's why. Have we considered that?
Mm-hmm. You'd sleep more if you're just gay.
Find a boy, friend him, see what happens.
Just tire yourself out.
Just any boy, Lou Ferrigno Jr., and he would tire you out.
I totally lost the fucking thread. What's next?
I don't get it.
Hey, guys, you know what time? Wait, you know what's boring, but less so if you're gay?
Game time.
With a Y.
I'm not exactly sure why, but I'm going to apologize for that. Okay.
Yeah.
It is the 8th game time of the season. The scores are Tara with 4. If she wins today, she wins everything. Sarah's got 1. Value guests, represented by Dan today, have 2. Today, we are playing TV Head Shrinkers Bracket, brought to you by BetterHelp. I don't know what that means. From Dave Snyder. Remember Dave? He helped us with the Star Trek draft many years ago.
Yes.
Oh, hey, buddy.
He earns himself an extra credit. Topic of his choosing, plus a free shirt from the EHG store at throughmethods.com. This game tests your knowledge of TV's portrayal of mental health professionals, helping both psychopaths and sociopaths.
Nice.
We will give you the name of an actor and a psychiatrist, psychologist, or other therapist they portrayed on television. Characters might be regulars or they might be notable guest stars. For 3 points, give me the name of the show on which the character appeared. In the case of characters who appeared on multiple shows, we are always looking for the show on which the character originated.
Okay. Right?
If you need a hint, I will give you the years and network or streaming service the show was on. This will not include reunions, revivals, restorations, redos, rebirths, any of the re's, or interactive specials. So no e-boots.
Okay.
Just the show's original run. If you can correctly guess the show at this point, 2 points. If you still need another hint, I will give you the name of a character from the show for which the mental health professional provided therapy or other help, after which an answer will be worth 1 point. Any questions at this point, Sarah DeBunting?
Yes. Do we get free guesses or not?
You get only one guess. Only one guess. So only. Use it wisely. Steel meal situation plays dark.
Thank you, Dave. Sarah has 4. I have 4. Valued guests have 2 plus Eric's meal for a total of 3. I just remembered that I have 4 because of something that happens in an episode that hasn't aired yet, but I will abide by it regardless.
All right. How big of you? Okay, let's throw it to Picky to see who is going first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right, that means Dan is first, then Tara, then Sarah. 33 questions, 2 gross worth equalizer challenge zones today.
Worth
3 or 6 points, depending how well you do. Are we ready to play TV Head Shrinkers, brought to you by BetterHelp?
Yes.
What is BetterHelp?
Yes.
It's wow. like podcast advertiser.
It's like Blue Apron for the head.
You've never heard of BetterHelp ad because they're right. on every podcast.
Yeah, you know, I don't listen to
the same
podcast.
I feel like we read a couple of them, honestly.
All right. Oh,
let's go.
All right. Dan Rogge. Lorraine Bracco as Dr. Jennifer Melfi. Name the show. The Sopranos. That is good for a full 3 points. Marina Sirtis as Counselor Deanna Troi.
Well, that's Star Trek : The Next Generation.
You're correct. Sarah DeBunting. Kelsey Grammer as Dr. Fraser Crane.
Remember, it's the original show.
Remember, it's the original.
And I should know, it's Cheers.
Nice.
You are correct. All right, everybody's got their full points. Woo. Back to Dan. Oh, God. Excuse me for a second. Dying. On top of everything else, I'm dying.
Well, you're very chipper about it.
Well, you got to go sometime, right?
Apparently it's today.
Maybe not right now.
Back to Dan. Bob Newhart as Dr. Robert Bob Hartley.
Bob Newhart show.
Holy shit, what? Get to the basement, cats! Yes. Bob Newhart's here! You're correct, that is the Bob Newhart show. Tara.
Yes.
Harry Shearer as Dr. Marvin Monroe.
The Simpsons.
Yes, correct. Sarah DeBunting. Carolyn McCormick as Dr. Elizabeth Olivet.
Law and Order.
Correct. Everybody's got maximum points still. Back to Dan. Harrison Ford as Dr. Paul Rhodes.
Oh, that show with one word that was just on, right?
It was show like with one word that was just on.
Streamery, it's called like thinking. All right, I'll take the first hint.
Apple TV 2023.
Right. And it was with... So I don't need any more hints. I just need to think of the word.
Onward. I believe it is still officially right? still in production.
Yeah.
Yeah, it got renewed.
Shrinking.
You are nice. Correct. 2 points.
Nice.
Thank you.
To Tara.
Yes.
Tina Fey as Dr. Andrea Baden.
Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
You are correct. Sarah DeBunting. Alan Arbus as Dr. Sidney Freeman.
Good one.
Alan who?
Alan, A-L-L-A-N, Arbus, A-R-B-U-S, Dr. Sidney Freeman.
I need a hint, please.
The network is CBS, the years 1972 to 1983. Your next hint will be somebody they treated.
Right. I'm going to need that hint as well, please.
One of the characters that passed by this gentleman, Benjamin Franklin Hawkeye Pierce.
Oh, MASH.
MASH is good for 1 point.
Chicken was a baby.
It's a baby. Gillian Anderson as Dr. Bedelia DeMaurier. Maurier.
Is that for me?
Oh, yeah, that's for you, Dan. Yes. Sorry.
Is that for me? Because I don't like it was the end of that sentence.
Is that for me? Can I pass? The answer is yes and no.
Anderson.
NBC 2013 to 2015.
God. Okay, I'll take the last one.
Okay, the hint is a really good hint. Hannibal Lecter.
Is it? Hannibal.
It was Moonlighting. It was one of those crazy episodes of Moonlighting.
Yeah.
Some eat by day. Some by night. Yes. Hannibal is correct. 1 point. Tara.
Yeah.
Adam Arkin as Dr. Stanley Keyworth.
Oh, God. Hint.
NBC, 1999, 2006.
That's such a long time. 99. I'm just going to guess Third Rock from the Sun. Shit.
You're incorrect. Anybody want to steal that? Anybody know? Nobody
steal
knows?
Steal it for two.
2 points. All right.
Wait, which Arkin was it?
Adam.
Oh.
Steel Meal.
Okay.
West Wing.
West Wing. Good for two. Wow.
Well stolen. Ugh, I was picturing Alan, even though I heard Adam. Good job,
yeah,
Sarah.
And then I was like, we sure about the network on that? Anyway.
Yeah, good job.
All right, this will take us into our first score break. It is for Sarah D. Bunting. Andre Brower as Dr. Daryl Nolan.
Daryl Nolan. I would like a hint, please.
Fox, 2004 to 2012. Oh,
wow. Could I have another hint, please?
That wasn't it.
Oh, that was the hint?
So behind the scenes. I'm so glad I finally had a chance to meet you guys.
All right, your hint, somebody that this person talked to about brain issues, Gregory House.
Oh, that's a good hint.
Oh, House, MD.
It was this old house. No, it's House.
You're this old house.
Yeah, you're this old house. All right, scores, please.
Oh, boy. Sarah D. Bunting is in the lead with 10 points. Dan and I are tied with 9.
It won't last.
All right, who's last again?
We're tied.
I had a little micro apple that was happening. Okay. All right, Dan, you haven't been here for a while. Since you've been here, we've had 24 more different boxes of TV things to choose from. So I'm going to let you choose, Dan, because you're our guest.
Yeah.
So you can have the Trivial Pursuit DVD Pop Culture 2 without the DVD bit. You can have the 90s edition, the 80s edition, the original purple edition from the mid-80s that is full of stuff like Ed Sullivan, who dat? Yeah. And then we have the Goodwill generic TV trivia game cards I found.
Well, choose what you want. It's you're
no,
the
I'm
guest.
I'm going to go with the first. I'll go with the DVD then, the first box you were holding.
It's it disappeared.
It's well, the one beside
you're
you.
You're right. It's that your one. Other right. There you go.
Good job.
All right.
Okay, so we both answer.
You confer, and then you give me an official answer.
Well, we can.
You share points. You share the points. So if you sweep it, you both get 3. And if you only get 3 points, yes, there will be a half point in the mix. I don't want any more guff about it.
All right.
It's not that hard to figure it out. It's a half a fucking point.
No one's complaining.
No, they were complaining last time. Last time I got so much fucking lip, I cried for a week.
And then you slept for 2 weeks.
I saved up all my tears, though. I slept for 30 hours.
You want that? How will Sarah get blamed for this? Let's find out.
You keep out of this. Okay.
There it is.
I just opened. I just cellophane cracked open the second half of this.
Exciting.
So
oh,
these are definitely all new. TV. What actress? That's the question. What actress? Guess.
Oh, okay. Lorraine Bracco.
Oh, not right. What
I was
actress?
Gonna say Nicole Kidman. Yep.
Mm-hmm. What actress starring as a college sophomore on A Different World was obliged to leave the show when she became pregnant?
Oh, A Different World. That's Lisa Bonet. I heard Another World. But yes, it's A Different World. Lisa Bonet.
I may have said Another World.
No.
It's been a long time.
I know.
Sarah.
It's been a long road.
No, oh, she's just counting. So many points. She's counting our points.
There's so many questions you have correct.
Got it.
Sleepy. Okay, here we go. What actress played Lana Lang in the movie Superman 3 and Martha Kent on TV's Smallville?
I believe that's Annette O'Toole.
Annette O'Toole is correct.
Wow.
What NBC series gave 14-year-old Kirsten Dunst a chance to play a prostitute named Charlie?
That's ER.
Dan, do you concur?
Do you want to go? I want to give Tara the points, but I'm going to split him anyway.
ER is correct. All right,
1.5 points accomplished.
1.5 points each. If you get the next 3 in all 3, we'll double that.
Okay.
Pop quiz, how much would that be? 3 points each, you're correct. What does the J stand for in Homer J. Simpson?
I think it's J-A-Y, right? Isn't that just the name J? Like Jay Leno?
J-A-Y is your answer?
Yes.
You are correct.
Wow.
TV. Who passed Hugh Downs' record in 2004 when his total hours of TV hit a mind-numbing 15,188?
This is where the streak comes to an end, because this could be anyone. I mean, like Dan Rather, Morley Safer, Mike Wallace. I don't know.
Jesus.
Lawrence Welk.
In 2004?
But that's what I'm saying.
Wheel him out. Lap,
and then he died 5 days later. Barbara Walters.
2004. What was happening in 2004?
The View.
Yeah, sure. Barbara Walters. Why
Barbara
not?
Barbara Walters is incorrect.
So the
You should have asked for a lifeline, because that was Regis Philbin.
Oh, wow.
Good one.
All right, but you still got 1.5 points each. So let's get the updated scores, please.
Well, now they're very silly. Sarah has 10 points. Dan and I are tied with 10 and a half.
There's nothing silly about numbers.
You're right. It's very
numbers
serious.
Numbers are our friends.
So true.
Speak for yourself.
All right, let's get back to it. This is back to Dan. Mo Gaffney as Dr. Sheila Kleinman. Mo Gaffney.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. No, I...
Yeah, Tara can't help you anymore. We're outside of it.
Just can't get you that covered at half point no longer. All right, I'll take one hint.
NBC, 1992 to 1999.
Oh, because she was a fun... speaking to neurotic New Yorkers everywhere. Is this Mad About You?
Mad About You, yes.
I was about to say, I was just talking about this show yesterday to Sarah, but that wouldn't have helped you. But it would have helped Sarah if she got to the steel meal state.
Would it have?
Yeah.
Tara.
Yeah.
Oh, excuse me. What if I just don't edit this episode?
You haven't
episode?
Been up enough to generate that much gas. This is suspicious.
I do it while I sleep. Tara,
he is a professional.
You're right.
John Slattery as Dr. Lyle Betancourt.
The Good Fight.
Correct. Sarah. Oh, I'm not sure which way this is pronounced, but we'll try it. Paul F. Is it F? That was a little joke. I know how to say it. Paul F. Tompkins as Dr. Maglimo. Dr. Maglimo, or perhaps Midglimo, but I'll spell it for you. M-I-G-L-E-E-M-O.
Thank you for spelling it, but I still need a hint.
All right. This aired on CBS All Access and then to Paramount Plus on, it's on 2020 to the present.
Also doesn't help me. Next hint.
One of the characters this person had a talk to is Dr. Ensign Beckett Mariner.
Is this at, I always want to say below deck. Star Trek Lower Decks?
Star Trek Lower Decks. Yes. Good
wow.
for a point. Nicely done.
Mm-hmm.
To Dan.
Space.
Diane Weiss as Dr. Gina Toll.
Gina Toll.
Shout out to everybody who's playing the Brooklyn Nine-Nine cold open in their head right now.
Me.
Because I know I am.
I'll take one hint.
HBO, 2008 to 2010.
Oh, that's in treatment.
It is in treatment, yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. Dr. Paul Weston was her patient.
That's right.
All right, this is question 17.
It's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool.
Rita Moreno as Sister Peter Marie Raimondo.
Oz.
Sarah. Kurt Fuller as Dr. Kurt Boggs. What the hell's my name again? Just call him Kurt. Kurt Fuller as Kurt Boggs. Doctor.
Hint.
This was on all of these things. CBS, CBS All Access, then Paramount Plus from 2019 to 2024. Ended this year.
Hint.
Hint is Kristen Bouchard. Kristen Bouchard.
I don't think you've ever watched this show.
Yellowstone, the new class.
Yep, here's your problem. Someone set this thing to evil.
That's evil.
Oh.
Oh, okay.
Boy, oh boy.
All right, this is a question. It's for Dan. Stanley Campbell as Dr. Charles Kroger.
Oh, wait, I know this. Hint.
USA Network, 2002-2009.
Oh, it's all those shows that are the same. I'll do, you know what? I don't even think the third hint will help me. Blue Bloods.
No, it will.
Really? Should I do it? Okay, fine. Third hint. The one point hint.
So let me just get this straight. You answered, and then everybody said, no, the clue will help you. And then you thought, Dave will probably still give me the clue?
Because the clue is Meghan Markle, and the answer is suits. What? Yeah, sure. I want
to. All right. It's only because I called you a psychopath at the start, I'm going to give you this one.
So many times.
But for every four times I call you a psychopath, you get one hint. So we're even now. Your hint is Adrian Monk.
Oh, all right. Well, I'm still basking in the refracted glory from the Equalizer challenge, so I'll put up one more vanity point for Monk.
All right, there you go, Monk. To Tara.
Yeah.
Julia Ormond as Dr. Paula Geisen. G-Y-S-O-N.
Hint.
This show was on NBC and USA 2001-2011. 10 years.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. I guess I will guess Law & Order Criminal Intent?
You're correct. Gorin was one of her patients.
Sure.
Yeah, she did a great job.
Good
no
luck
notes.
With what I was going to say.
Nicole DeBoer as Ezri Dax. E-Z-R-I. That's for Sarah.
No, I'm just contemplating which franchise I'm going to guess and be wrong. Again, Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Nice!
Well, well, well. Look who got 3 points on a space question.
How do you keep getting those?
Oh, we planned it that way. I give Sarah all the space questions. It's
long,
random.
Sad experience.
All right, back to Dan. John Oliver as Professor Ian Duncan.
Oh, God, I definitely watched this.
Professor Ian Duncan. John Oliver. Gonna need an answer, Dan, or you can ask for a hint.
I'll take one hint.
This show started on NBC, last seen on Yahoo, 2009 to 2015.
Community
is correct. Yes. Tara.
Yeah.
Rachel Harris as Dr. Linda Martin.
Hint.
Fox, then Netflix, 2016 to 2021.
Fox, then Netflix. Hint.
All right. Here's another tricky one. Lucifer Morningstar.
Oh, is it Lucifer?
No, I'm sorry. No, it is. All right, here's our next question before our final Equalizer score break. It is for Sarah. Susan Sarandon as Dr. Wong.
Hint.
Adult Swim from 2013 onwards.
Hint really will not help, but just on the off chance that there's a titular character name, could I have the last hint, please?
Your hint is Adrian Monk. No, it's not. Rick Sanchez.
The Sanchez is... Just kidding. Children's Hospital?
Steel
meal. Yeah, use
Rick.
It.
Rick of Rick and Morty.
Rick and Morty, correct. Yes, good for a point.
Oh, that thing.
All right.
Yes, exactly.
Let's get the scores.
Okay, I have 19 and a half. Dan has 18 and a half. Sarah has 14.
All right, so that means, Sarah, guess what? You are in the Gross Earth Equalizer Challenge Zone. Oh, song's ended. What box you want?
That's what she said. No. Same one as they used before, the DVD thingy that you just unwrapped.
Okay. Precise as always. Here we go. Gonna ask you this 6 TV questions. 3 or 6 points could be your prize. Here we go. Who is Adrian Monk? No. What? What chef hosted the Food Network shows Hot Off the Grill, Food Nation, and Grillin' and Chillin'?
I don't know. Guy Fieri?
Bobby Flay. Bobby Flay.
Oh, fuck that guy. I'll beat Bobby Flay.
Get ready. There's a rhyme here.
Ooh.
Brace yourself. What game dame cited her favorite put down as, "You have a brain only a mother could admire"?
God, what's that bitch's name?
What was that bitch's name? It's actually the rest of that question. I elected not to read it, but that is correct. What that bitch's name?
Dame. You have a brain only a mother could admire?
Yeah.
Oh, what was that bitch's last name?
Yeah.
Because I could describe Anne, what's her ass, from The Weakest Link. Goodbye. But I can't remember her last name. So Anne from The Weakest Link, semicolon, goodbye.
You were correct with the information provided, but the word we were looking for was Robinson.
Robinson!
Oh.
All right. So you need 3 of the last 4. What kids series evolved from Craig McCracken's student film project, The Whoop-Ass Girls?
The Powerpuff Girls.
Powerpuff Girls is correct.
I was like, Ren and Stimpy.
Whose handwriting was The Simpsons typeface based on?
Orson Welles.
Yeah. I was about to make a Comic Sans joke, but I'm not going to do it. Matt Groening.
All right. 2 questions and you need 1 of these. What the fuck? All right. Good luck. What tiny planets, that's a show, what tiny planets co-star zooms through space on a flying sofa with Bing?
Crosby.
You're on the right track. The answer is Bong.
Oh.
All right.
My second choice was Cherry. Okay.
This is it. You got to get this to get 3 points.
I believe in you.
Okay. Looking for a Scrubs question. The real
skipping the movie questions.
What color shirt does Bart Simpson habitually wear on television? Color.
Oh, what color is it? Jesus.
Color is Bart Simpson's shirt. Shirt, not short.
Shirt.
Yep.
Is, blue. I don't know.
That's his pants.
Okay. It's red.
It's orange. Yeah. Incorrect. Orange is the
orange?
Shirt.
Yes. I said orange.
It says orange.
What?
Oh, okay. Color was different those days. All right.
I guess.
Let's get back into it. Everybody has 3 questions left. Back to Dan. Adil Akhtar as Martin.
Okay. Hint.
BBC America 2018 to 2022.
Oh, okay, hint.
Hint? Eve Pilastri.
Yeah, Eve, Killing Eve.
Okay, Killing Eve, good for 1, yes. Back to Tara.
Yes.
Amy Madigan as Dr. Catherine Wyatt.
Ugh, hint.
ABC, 2005 to the present.
Grey's Anatomy?
What else would it be?
Yeah.
2020? Sarah, Tracy Ullman. As Dr. Tracy Clark.
Hint.
Fox, 1997 to 2002.
Hint.
One of the lead characters in this show, Ally McBeal.
Ally McBeal.
No, it's the Dancing Baby Show, the famous spinoff. Ally McBeal, good for 1 point.
Spinoff was just called Allie, Dave. We all know that.
I've had enough of your lip, but it's still your turn. Dan, Sarah Niles as Dr. Sharon Fieldstone.
Apple TV Plus. You know it's good because it's got the plus right in it.
Hmm.
You know where they put all their bad shows? That's right. 2020 to 2023.
The morning show, I don't know. Okay, one more hint.
All right. One of the people on the metaphorical couch, Danny Rojas.
Wants to steal from Dan.
Dan does not know. Steel mill, 1 point opportunity. That's Ted Lasso. Ted Lasso.
Oh, I'm in excellent company to not know that, and I couldn't be happier.
Ted Lasso.
Tutar.
Yeah.
Jean Smart as Dr. Melanie Bird.
Hint.
Bird is the shrink. FX 2017 to 2019.
I just got it. Legion.
Legion, good for two. Yes. Legion. Sarah D. Bunting. Jane Lynch as Dr. Linda Freeman. Didn't we already have that? Didn't we already have a Freeman? Didn't we already? Yes, we did have a Freeman. Different show. Perhaps a relative.
Linda Freeman. Hint.
CBS 2003 to 2015. The other Freeman was in MASH. That was.
Oh, that's right.
Hint.
Charlie Harper is a character on the couch of Dr. Linda Freeman.
What was the network again? I'm sorry.
CBS.
CBS. 2003-2015. About 12 years, according to my calculations.
Long-running show about Charlie.
Harping. I don't know. CIS Curdeline. I don't know the answer to this.
Incorrect. Up for a steel mill if anybody wants it.
Is it? Oh, Tara, do you want to do
you
it?
Have a steel mill. You can steal it.
Let's call it.
Wait, is it Two and a Half Men?
I can't tell you. You have to tell me if that's your answer.
It's Two and a Half Men.
It is Two and a Half Men, yes. Yes, it is. All right. That's
I'm one glad more, I didn't know that.
One more point for Dan. Everybody has one question left, so here's scores. Here's scores. Let's go scores.
Okay. Sarah has 15. Dan has 20. I have, 20 and a half. I have 24 and a half.
All right. Let's get back to it. Whoops. Yeah, well, whatever. Show's been a shit show so far. Why bother? Everybody's last question coming at you. Of course, as a tradition, the points are doubled.
Well, Dan was at the top of the order, so our questions are still coming at us.
Everybody has one question left.
He just had his. Oh, that was Sarah's. I'm so sorry.
No, he didn't. He stole from me.
I'm so sorry. I think you only have 23 points. Sorry, Dave. I'm so sorry. Dave, I'm so sorry. I apologize.
All right. Everybody's points are doubled except for Tara's.
Fine.
Oh, dear. Gloria Rubin. Mr. Dan Rogge has Krista Gordon. Gloria Rubin, famous for her sandwiches.
Hint.
The network is USA.
USA. USA.
The years are 2015 to 2019.
Take the last hint.
All right. Now, for some reason, you don't get the title character as a clue, but I'm going to make it easier for you. And actually only give you one of the names of the clue. Because I think it would help you. Elliot. And it's not E.T. I can give you both. Elliot Alderson.
It's just all blue bloods to me. No idea.
The show we're looking for is Monsieur Robot.
Oh, I watched that.
We all did at one point.
Yes. Yeah.
Then we stopped.
We did.
Tara.
Yeah.
For half a point.
Okay.
Samira Wiley as Justina Jordan.
This is both the answer and a judgment. Yeah. You're the worst.
Ooh. 1 point. No, three points. 3 points for being correct.
Uh-huh.
Negative 2 points for the sass.
I'll take it.
Sarah D. Bunny gives our last question of regulation. Issa Rae as Dr. Indindra Dadishu? Dadishu? D-A-D-Y-S-H-U.
Doesn't matter. Hint. Hint.
Q-Q-W-X. Now I know my ABCs.
F-U-2. Hint.
Won't you accept Netflix 2014 to 2020 as your hint? N-E-T-F-L-I-X.
Doesn't matter now. Orange is the New Black?
Incorrect.
Dan Rogge wants to steal me with this one. No, he just wants to point at himself. Feel like a big man.
That one. Yeah.
The answer we're looking for here is Bojack Horseman. Bojack Horseman.
Right.
Sure. All right. Given the fact that I'm taking 12 points off Tara's score for the hell of it, what's our final scores? I'm not, Tara. I would never. I couldn't. Jesus. I don't have the authority. Sounds like I do, but I don't. I answer to the gaming board, and they are saying, Dave, just you can't do it.
Okay.
Dave, go to sleep, they're saying. Just getting a text right now. I can't. Show's still on.
Sarah finished with 15 points, Dan 20 and a half, and I finished with 25 and a half.
All right, woo-hoo! That means today's game belongs to Daria. Oh wait, let's do the thing.
Yep.
Tiebreaker.
Mhm.
That too. First let's do the thing.
Okay.
Everybody know.
Okay, people okay. Gotta go.
All right, fine. All right, which Friends main cast member did not appear on Web Therapy?
Joey? Matt LeBlanc?
Incorrect. You just lost 12 points.
Damn.
Schwimmer.
You just lost a 12th of a point. Dan, can you answer? This is worth 1,000 points. Aniston, correct for 1,000 points.
Wow.
So hey, Dan won. Win.
Nice. Yeah.
Tara.
And with that, well, Tara guessed. Has won the season.
Yay. Tara.
She got points.
Why do you feel so cute
at the show? Everybody's happy about this.
Let's wrap it up.
And that's when we lost
I tried
everything.
To, but it's not working.
You're here not trying go. Very hard.
Look.
He's very trying.
Well.
Look, either you get too much sleep or you don't get enough of sleep.
Mm.
Same results. Same results. Well, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We gained your confidence with our honest opinions about Ripley before going around the dial with stops at Monsters at Work, Only Murders in the Building, Space Show, and Brett put the thing in the can. And nope, she didn't.
Nope.
Oop, nope. Edit. And Brett didn't. Brett didn't have anything for this. And Brett couldn't quite get Moonlighting's black and white Orson Welles tour the black and white forest into the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's incredibly smooth game time from Dave. Not me, the other Dave.
Yep.
The Dave that knows what he's doing. Next up, the 11th President of the United States of America and noted day organizer, Franklin. Remember,
we're listening.
I'm David Tekel, and on behalf of Tara Arianna,
I told you I love you, now get out.
Sarah D. Butting.
It's-a me, Ripley-o.
And Dan Rogge.
Get well real soon, Dave.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
You're free of me now. And I of you.